Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studio in New York City and video streaming at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNull.com. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. No health and nutrition, rather looking at important issues that do not get the attention that I believe they deserve, where I'll be sharing my own commentary, those of others or combinations, and then asking you to call in and share your points of view. Our number is 888-874-4888. Please wait till you hear a few of these. Most are short. I'll be talking about America's Culture of Cruelty from Professor Henry Giroux, Sentimental Mass Murder by Den Lin from Common Dreams, from Tykem, The Revolt of the Elites and Moral Deficit. We are a nation of suckers. While the U.S. blows money on military, Europe spends the money on social programs. From Joshua Holland, Alternate. Ralph Nader, waging another unconstitutional war. From Common Dreams. And closing out the hour, Ron Paul, champion of greed, not liberty. And I will be sharing my thoughts about why I believe that the libertarian movement as it is today lacks humanistic values, but there's a lot I do agree, and Ron Paul should be at this point in his life capable of seeing the limitations of the free market system that he champions. Eric Wallenberg, Shanghai Cooperative Organization versus the Bilderberg. Where are real decisions being made and how we can change what's happening in the world? All important issues, none of which are getting the attention I believe that they should, and none in the mainstream media. The recent murderous acts of violence committed by Jared Lee Longer in Arizona cannot be reduced to the mental instability of a young man out of touch with reality, nor can such a horrendous act be reduced to a breakdown in civil discourse. Such rationales are too easy, and emulate what Frank Rich has called classic American denial. There is a deeper order of politics behind this murderous act, one that the American public is inclined to ignore. More specifically, the general responses to this violent act are symptomatic of a society that separates private injuries from public considerations, refusing to connect individual acts to broader social considerations. Now, what do I mean by this? Think of it this way. With one single drug, Vioxx, 60 million Americans died. Those deaths could have been prevented because the FDA knew there were serious questions about the safety of Vioxx from its own internal physicians, including a Dr. David Graham. Graham wrote memo after memo. I have seen those. He brought those before Congress. And yet, instead of respecting the fact that they had someone concerned enough about the public health inside the FDA, that they should acknowledge that care, instead they tried to intimidate him, threaten him, bribe him, and then relegate him to non-significance. As a result, 60,000 Americans had heart attack and strokes and died. Another 120,000 had heart attacks and strokes. And we don't know how many have died since, but they at least hadn't died by the time of the final litigation. At the end of the day, the manufacturer, who has had multiple cases of creating drugs that killed people, paid a $5.85 billion fine. The value of the stock went up. The head of the company got a raise. No one was held either morally accountable, not the doctors that prescribed it without doing their homework to see first what was the truth behind Vioxx and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, COX-2 inhibitors, that kill a minimum of 24,000 Americans each year just for arthritis treatment. And in this case, 60,000. And we're not even asking a more important question. Were these doctors aware, or did they choose to know, that there are natural, non-toxic approaches that can turn off pain, heal the body, and so the person no longer suffers from chronic inflammatory conditions? Instead, what we have had is hundreds of thousands of lawsuits settled by pharmaceutical companies where patients have been injured or killed, and not a single person held personally accountable. They are protected. If you or I injure or kill someone, we're held personally accountable. Our reputations will be forever affected. Yet why do we give a second set of standards to corporations? I believe that today we have a culture of cruelty, and it's important for thinking through how entertainment and politics now converge in ways that fundamentally transform how we understand and imagine politics in the current historical moment, a moment when the central issue of getting by is no longer about working to get ahead, but struggling and simply to survive. In many groups which are considered marginally important because they are poor, they are unemployed, people of color, elderly, the young, or they are the working poor. They simply have been excluded from the American dream. They have been excluded from the body politic. Well, let me put it a little different way. When was the last time, to your knowledge, any person of power in the United States, corporate CEOs, the heads of nonprofit foundations, people within the legislative process in Washington, actively sought the opinions on a regular basis of 100 million Americans who fit the category I just mentioned? I would like to see actual examples of this. The only time these people are ever approached is when they're asked to support a political party or a person within that party, and rarely is it ever determined that these people have advocates actually making their lives better. As of today, there has been no national referendum to stop home foreclosures, yet easily enough, Congress could have done that. The President could do it by executive order. So we have to be honest at some point and say the national body politic does not care about 100 million or one-third of the population's interest, but surely cares about those who are the most powerful 1%. We have a hard time facing this reality. Also, how else to explain the zealousness in which social safety nets have been dismantled under Reagan and under Clinton, under George Bush and under Obama? The transition from welfare to workfare, offering little job training programs, no child support, and recent acrimony over health care's reform public option. What accounts for the passage of laws that criminalize the behavior of over 1.2 million homeless in the United States that are official? The unofficial figure, 6 million. Often defining sleeping, sitting, soliciting, lying down, or loitering in a public place as a criminal offense rather than a behavior in need of compassionate goodwill and public assistance. Or for that matter, the expulsion, suspension, segregation, class discrimination, and racism in the public schools, as well as the more severe beatings, broken bones, and damaged lives endured by young people in the juvenile justice system. Within this politics, there is a ruthless and hidden dimension of cruelty, one in which the powers of life and death are increasingly determined by punishing apparatuses such as the criminal justice system for poor people of color, and or for market forces that increasingly decide who may live and who may die, not because of any moral or justice imperative, but because of how much profit can a for-private prison system make. But there is more. The growing dominance of a right-wing media forged in the power of hate has become a crucial element, providing numerous platforms for a culture of cruelty. This form of cultural power is increasingly characterized by more than breach of civility. It also registers without apology and legitimizes a hostility towards immigrants, a barely disguised racism, a contempt for the poor and almost anyone supportive of the social contracts and progressive causes. Citizens are increasingly constructed through a language of contempt for all non-commercial public spheres, a chilling indifference to the plight of others that is increasingly expressed in vicious tirades against big government and health care reform. There's a growing element of scorn on the part of the American public for those human beings unfortunately caught in the web of misfortune and human suffering and dependency and deprivation. For instance, how else to explain a right-wing spin machine that endlessly spews out a toxic rhetoric in which all Muslims are defined as jihadist? The homeless are not victims of misfortune, but are lazy. Blacks are not terrorized by an overzealous criminal justice system, but are the main architects of a culture of criminality. The epidemic of obesity has nothing to do with corporations and big agriculture and advertisers selling junk food, but the result of the big government giving people food stamps. The public sphere is largely for white people, which is being threatened by immigrants and people of color, and so the arguments go, day in and day out. Have you taken the time to listen to hate radio, which is much of what passes for discussion today? I've taken the time to listen to both the liberal and the conservative, the right and the left wing, and I've heard the same from both. One is accusing the other of the problems, and neither has the solutions. What good does it do to focus upon a problem if you do not have a solution? But in their idea, the solution is having their own party in power. Well, hello? The Republicans had the power, and look what they did with it. Then the Democrats had the power, and look what they didn't do with it. Show me the difference today between the Democrats and Republicans when it comes to the consequences of creating artificial structures that have nothing to do with actual economic reality, the balloons, the real estate balloon, the subprime balloon, the commercial real estate balloon, the credit card balloon, the student debt balloons, the hedge fund balloons, the commodities future balloons. They pump these up, make their money, and get out. Everyone else becomes a victim. And so their answer is, put us in power and we'll change things. Really? You were in power. Both of you were in power. You contributed nothing to the public good. You did not protect our environment. You did not help those who are in most need of help. You did not create long-term stability. You did not look at our natural resources as finite. You did not consider peak oil, peak water. You did not care about the land that we're growing corn and soy and sugar beet for ethanol instead of food for humans. You did not care about globalization. From a neocon point of view, war is good. Why is war good? Not because you want one side to win over another. That is irrelevant to you. But war creates debt. It's not how much money you make off a weapon system that you care about. Yes, the private military contractor does care about that because it's their form of socialization. The very thing they hold in contempt if you're poor to have government help, they absolutely demand and depend upon government help, which means the public help. But then it's considered a patriotic duty to support these military contractors because they, by some myth, are supposed to be protecting us from what? We should be protected from them and their predatory natures. This is the kind of false illusion we live by at every level. But have you heard anyone in the mainstream media discussing this? Have you heard Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levine? Have you heard the people on the left or right actually methodically go through how much corporate welfare we have, how much corporate socialism we have? $2 trillion a year. And yet, we are not asked or encouraged by public will or political demand to rid our society of this system. Instead, we're told they are the power, and any sacrifices must come from those who are least able to pay for that sacrifice. You do not see the politicians shedding their blood in the battlefields that have no earthly benefit to us or the people there. And that's the way it goes. Now, to conclude this, I could dismiss a lot of this as left-wing indifference and corruption and corporatism and right-wing loony political theater, a modern form of the kabuki dance of idiots. If it were not for the low levels of civil literacy displayed by so many Americans who choose to believe and invest in this type of hate talk and illusionary expulsion. On the contrary, while it may be idiocy, it reveals a powerful set of political, economic, and educational forces at work in miseducating the American public, while at the same time extending the culture of cruelty. Rather than being unspoken and unseen, violence in American life has become both visible in its pervasiveness and normalized as a central feature of dominant and popular culture. Americans have grown accustomed to luxuriating in the warm bath of cinematic blood, as young people and adults alike are seduced with an endless stream of violence that runs through the endless production of video games, extreme sports, and non-stop production of Hollywood blockbusters. The celebration of hyperviolence and torture travels all too easily from fiction to real life, with the emergence in the past few years of a proliferation of bum fights, videos on the internet, increased acts of violence and bullying in schools and workplace, and young boys investing in a mode of masculinity organized around pummeling each other for sport. The culture of cruelty mimics cinematic violence as the agents of abuse both indulge in actual forms of violence, and then further celebrate the barbarity by posting it on the web, mimicking the desire for fame and recognition while voyeuristically consuming their own violent cultural productions. The ideology of hardness and cruelty run through American culture like an electric current, sapping the strength of social relations and individual character, moral, compassion, and collective action, offering up crimes against humanity that become fodder for video games and spectacularized media infotainment, and constructing a culture of cruelty that promotes a pageant of suffering and violence. While much of this violence is passed off as entertainment, it should not be surprising when it travels from the major cultural apparatuses to our time of real life, exploding in front of us, refusing to be seen as just another entertainment spectacle. In conclusion, think about the Vietnam War. Why do we finally say no more? Because suddenly it was no longer John Wayne and the Marines fighting some persons in a foreign country. It became our sons and daughters coming back injured or in body bags, and suddenly it was real. It was not entertainment. It was not distraction. We had been pathologized, and therefore we said no more. And only because the average American working within the official power structure said no more. We did not leave Vietnam on the left. Please grow up at some point and actually show me an adult in the room with the left. We did not leave Vietnam because 680,000 or 700,000 marched in Washington. We did not leave because of Martin Luther King's speech, noble as it was. We did not leave because people set themselves on fire, the emulation of the body to project the spirit of disdain. We did not leave Vietnam for any other reason than because official support was gone. That meant the very people who had supported the war and the rhetoric behind that war and the surges by General Westmoreland and the Secretary of Defense, McNamara, was no longer there. For those of us who were progressive and outside of the official power structure, we could have been to this day demonstrating against the war, it would have fallen on deaf ears. The same today is true no matter how many Code Pink demonstrations, no matter how many banners are unfurled, no matter how many people get up in a room and shout out, it will do nothing to stop a war in Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan or Libya or any place else. It will not reduce the budget of the military-industrial complex on the left or the right. The only thing that will end conflict, the only thing that will stop abuse, the only thing that will rein in our culture of cruelty that has reached the point of sadism is when the average person. Those that you never see engaged in the physical debate by putting their bodies on a line, the professional class, the upper middle class, the wealthy class, the power class, the policymakers and opinion leaders, of which there are about 70 million, when they say, we don't want it anymore, only then will it stop. As long as they continue to support it, or are not against it, or do not show contempt for it, it will remain. And all the others who are just perplexed, why can't we learn this lesson? The lesson that you should learn is, the moment you're not in the mainstream consciousness, you also don't exist. I'm Gary Knoll. That's our first commentary. Your turn. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. While you're thinking about calling in, I will, and again, please, no calls on health. None. Zero. All right? This is about thinking about issues, and this is what's important on this particular show. When Obama came into power, there were roughly 35,000 American troops in Afghanistan. Within 2 years, he tripled that number. Now Obama announces that 10,000 soldiers will come home by the end of 2011 and 33,000 by the end of next summer. He surges twice, pulls back once, and declares it a successful withdrawal, as promised. I'm sure glad Obama is not my accountant, or both of us would be arrested for fraud. But wait a second, Obama is my accountant and my banker and my president. And why are we in Afghanistan? Well, officially we're there to fight the Taliban, whom we propped up in the first place. Democratic Jimmy Carter and Republican Ronald Reagan armed, financed, and trained these freedom fighters of, well, they were Islamo-fascist. In the 1980s, America poured gasoline on the flames of the Islamic fanaticism to burn down the Soviets in Afghanistan. Now we are the Soviets. America goes into Iraq and Afghanistan, turns these countries upside down, then explains that it would be irresponsible to leave them topsy-turvy. As long as America stays there, these countries will remain messed up. America causes bombs to explode, then insists that it has to stay until these bombs stop exploding. But America is the bomb. Time and again, America set the fire, then shows up as a volunteer firefighter, such as the burden of being a world leader in freedom, democracy, and weapon sales. America, you are a sentimental fool. You wage war after war, then pretend to mourn for some of the victims. As Barack sends America's sons and daughters into these endless carnages, Michelle urges us to value their pointless sacrifices. While our grunts perform their imperial overstretched duties overseas, their loved ones struggle back home. So Michelle wants us to offer their families comfort and assistance. Quote, it can be helping a neighbor mow their lawn. People can volunteer to babysit for an afternoon, cook a meal, offer to fix a heater, or reach out to a reserve family living away from the support of a military installation. Unquote. Of course, these hardships could be avoided if we would only stop sending our gang of fodders all over to kill and maim and sometimes be wiped out in turns. As the husband kills, the wife comforts. But often, this Janus trick is performed by the selfsame joker. It has become an annual rite for Colin Powell to give a solemn speech on the Capitol lawn on Memorial Day. This year, he again paid tribute to Americans, quote, fighting the global war against terrorism, serving and sacrificing in Afghanistan and Iraq, and at other outposts on the front lines of freedom. The life of each and every one of them is precious to their loved ones and to our nation. And each life given in the name of liberty is a life that has not been lost in vain. Unquote. Well, though Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11 and had no weapons of mass destruction, Powell can claim, even now and with a straight face, that it is in the front line of the war against terrorism. Dumb with his hypocritical verbiage, Powell went into the crowd to hug a dozen vets and their loved ones. He patted the baby of a brain-damaged blind man. Why, no one, but no one, stood up and shouted, "Hey, pal, wasn't it you who helped to lie us into this war? Didn't you stand in front of the whole world and pointed to bogus satellite photos of mobile laboratories for making biological weapons?" In contemporary America, an architect of war can play as at consoling its victims, and no one will bat an eye. We are also led to believe that people we bomb, shoot, and rape are our beneficiaries. According to Yahoo News, the withdrawal of American troops brings a mix of joy and concern among Afghans as the nation struggles with the idea of less assistance. So to invade a country is to assist it. But such is the logic of empire. Next time someone shoots you, know that you're being assisted. The empire is going broke, however, so our victims should voluntarily send us loads of cash. Visiting Baghdad, Congressman from California, Robacker, declared, quote, "Once Iraq becomes a rich, very rich nation and prosperous, we would hope that some consideration be given to repaying the United States some of the mega dollars that we have sent over here in the last 8 years. We were hoping that there would be a consideration of a payback because the United States right now is close to being very seriously economically in crisis, and we could certainly use some people to care about our situation as we have cared about theirs," unquote. Bombed by Obama, Libyans should feel similar gratitude. If the Libyans, for example, are willing to help pay, compensate the United States for what we send in helping them through this rough period, that's one way to, unquote. With one hand, Uncle Sam will shoot at you. With the other, he'll jiggle the tin cup. Give it up already. America's in deep, deep trouble. With all of our media the way they are, our leaders will continue speaking nonsense, and there's nothing right now we can do about it because those who are progressive are not allowed to debate them. I'm Gary Nall, and that's from Lynn Dinn. Your thoughts, your comments, your turn. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question. I'd like to know. Does she need me as she pretends? Is this a game? Well, then will I win? It's a lover's question. I'd like to know. Feel just what I feel, and how am I to know it's really real? Oh, tell me where the answer lies. Is it in her kiss?
I'd like to welcome all of you from around the world. What if our belief systems, which have not been challenged, most people defend their belief systems completely, what if we could stand back long enough and ask, what doesn't work? What should I no longer believe within my own belief system? Because what you believe becomes your reality. The trouble is all belief systems are both made up of constructive and destructive principles. Not everything is bad, not everything is good. But we're not allowed that choice of separating them out. You have to be a true believer. You have to be with us or against us, that mindset. And that's why on so many levels we are failing today. The trouble is the solutions we have are not solutions at all. They don't help. $13 trillion given by the Federal Reserve. There's no oversight. No one in Congress, no administration can stop the Federal Reserve. It doesn't have the power. The Federal Reserve is made up of private banks. It can do whatever it wants. There are political appointees, but be very clear. no one appoints the head of the Federal Reserve without the Federal Reserve deciding who it wants appointed, and therefore that's the person that, in a kind of a hollow ceremony, the president appoints. So $13 trillion, enough. Let me tell you what $13 trillion will do. $13 trillion would see that everyone who could not afford health insurance had it. $13 trillion would be able to virtually repair all of our infrastructure in the United States. It would also be able to completely get us off the electrical grid powered by nuclear, coal, and oil. In effect, we could go to wind, solar, geothermal, and wave energy in a relatively short period of time. It would see that we did not have 12 million hungry children each day waking up in America. We could do a lot with that money. We could de-ghettoize America. We could make major changes. We could bring industries into and support the development of industries in every community in the United States. We could find gainful employment for everyone. That's what $13 trillion could do if it was used properly. The trouble is the $13 trillion that has been expended, none of that went to the American public. It went to those in power. Because now they can create more debt, make more profit, and we pay for it. That concerns me. That's why I'm taking the time to share different points of view on this. Ralph Nader says the following. The meticulous Harvard Law Review editor should be rolling over in their footnotes. The recidivist violations of constitutional and statutory requirements by their celebrated predecessor at this journal, Barack Obama, has reached Orwellian dimensions in the war against Libya. You see the widespread daily bombing of Libya, the strict naval blockade of Gaddafi's controlled Libya, the destruction of Gaddafi's family compound and tent encampment in the desert, killing his son and three grandchildren, and the deploying of special forces inside Libya is not a war. It is, in the Obama White House's evasive nomenclature, just a time-limited, scope-limited military action. Can you find that phrase in the Constitution? If Obama used the word war, he would have to have a more difficult time explaining to Congress and the American people why he did not seek a declaration of war under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the Constitution, or seek congressional authorization for appropriate funds to further the war with our NATO co-warriors, or comply with the deadlines of the War Powers Resolution. He threw all three unlawful restraints on his presidential unilateralism overboard. So the invidious tradition of George Bush and his indentured confessor, Justice Department lawyer John Ho, now comfortably ensconced on the law faculty of the University of California, Berkeley, Mr. Obama is blithely claiming as authority for taking our country into yet another war, quote, the inherent powers of the president under Article 2 of the Constitution, unquote. This wouldn't pass the laugh test of Thomas Jefferson, Madison, Franklin, or even Hamilton. James Madison believed placing the war declaring power in the executive hands was wrong, and exclusively it had to be in the hands of Congress. And might mention that it was he who was the most significant achiever during the convention in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787 for this. No more King George substitutes for America's future, they demanded. Note that Libya did not attack the United States or its appendages, and did not attack a member of NATO. Obama admits these points. Libya's trusting government sovereign fund even left $37 billion in the United States, which Obama promptly froze. Lacking even the pretenses for Bush's illegal invasion of Iraq in 2003, Obama and Hillary Clinton now say the U.S. is militarily involved, quote, to protect our interests and advance our values in the region, and of course to protect the universal rights of the Libyan people. Desperately seeking legitimacy, is that what he's doing for this? Mr. Obama cites a UN resolution, NATO, and the Arab League instead of seeking it from Congress. For all treaties with foreign countries, including the UN Charter, are trumped by the U.S. Constitution. Reed versus Covert, 354 U.S. 1, 1957. As a former teacher of constitutional law, the president knows this basic principle, but then, as Lord Acton declared, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Congress rendered a rubber stamp by George Bush is bestirring itself. On June 3, 2011, the House of Representatives passed H.R. Resolution 292 declaring that the president shall not deploy, establish, or maintain the presence of units and members of the United States Armed Forces on the ground in Libya. On this matter, Obama pleads state secrets. On June 16, 2011, 10 members of the House, 5 conservative Republicans, and 5 Democrats filed suit against President Obama in federal district court for an order declaring the U.S. war in Libya without a declaration of Congress with use of funds never approved for such a war to be unconstitutional. Given past judicial decisions declaring members of Congress to have no standing to sue or what they call political matters, this suit is facing an uphill barrier. Congress has appropriated no money for this war, already costing over $1 billion, nor has the lawless Obama asked for it because he knows there will be a strong bipartisan resistance. So where is the Congress to go but to the courts to decide this internal domestic issue affecting the separation of powers provoked by a clearly lawless president? The degraded, politicized, formerly professional Office of Legal Counsel is a sleazy apologist for presidential overreaching for over 20 years. The expanding immunities of the executive branch, now increasingly embracing the military contractors of the corporate state, is destroying the remaining pretensions that we are a nation under law. When he was inaugurated as president in January 2009, President Obama said he wanted his administration to be known as one, quote, of transparency and the rule of law. You recall during his 2008 campaign, he trumpeted that he would obey the Constitution, inferring that the Republican regime was trampling the rule of law. In 2007, then-Senator Barack Obama stated, quote, the president does not have any power under the Constitution to unilaterally authorize a military attack in a situation that does not involve stopping an actual or imminent threat to the United States. Vice President Biden was even more vehement on this issue, and Secretary of Defense Bill Gates originally opposed the attack on Libya before falling in line. In conclusion, Gaddafi's dictatorship is a brutal one. Civil wars are brutal. People are dying and suffering. The country is being torn apart. Obama and NATO are not adequately testing offers for a truce and supervised elections. Top-level officials are defecting from Gaddafi and hoping to help lead any successor government. Regimes brutalize their people, whether as dictatorships, authoritarian rulers, connected with dominant oligarchs, or through racial, religious, or sectarian repressions. Is the United States mired in deep recession, debt, and its own kleptocracy going to continue to police the world with bases, interventions, and subversions or occupation? The cause of human rights everywhere needs a permanent, well-equipped, professional United Nations peacekeeping force and effective international courts to prevent mass massacres and mass brutalities. That time is not near, but it should be at the top of the agenda of civilized nations. The U.S. is the number one military superpower, provoking antagonisms with its pennant for control throughout the world. Should any imperially advanced country like ours rule the world, it is that belief which is bringing right and left together, not just in Congress, but around the country. End quote, Ralph Nader. Your thoughts. I've shared many commentaries here. I'd like to see what you think. I have a lot of respect for the opinions of people in this audience. As we come to these issues that are not talked about, are not debated, and certainly not discussed with various progressives being invited. I haven't seen Robert Marks. I haven't seen Joshua Holland or Chris Hedges or other invited into the mainstream media, even more often than not on the left or the right, to offer a different perspective. That's why the Progressive Radio Network does have their commentaries and my own to share with you. I'd like your feedback. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. My engineer just informed me that normally our phones blow off the hook, but we have had a little technical glitch, and I believe that he has just fixed it. So if you tried before and were not able to get through, you can now get through. 888-874-4888. Earlier today, I did a conference call around the world on homesteading, which was 2 hours. Evidently, someone didn't reset that through our system, and that's been done here. Let's say hello to Gene from New Jersey. Hi, Gene. You're on the air. Gene, don't listen over the radio or the computer. Listen over the telephone.
Yes, Gary.
Hi.
Hi. My question is, I'm kind of confused. Why should I vote? Because I think by voting, I'm contributing in all the horror the United States is doing around the world by electing this official.
I would agree with you. I would never waste the sacredness of a vote if I was going to vote for the worst of different evils. Hence, I would never vote Republican or Democrat unless they showed by example that they had not been co-opted on any of the issues that are important for the citizens. But when I see people getting money from special interest groups, and now their vote goes towards those interest groups, when I see generals coming before congressional oversight committees, and they're not declaring how much money they're making as consultants, and telling us we need new weapon systems, and then Congress says, good, we need these weapon systems, and tens of billions of dollars a year are absolutely wasted, having nothing in the world to do with real defense of our nation. Instead, they're purely for the profit of those companies that were smart enough to get the lobbyists, of which there are 44,000 lobbyists, plus far greater number of private consultants, and to go right back into their former offices. Why do you think industries are so good at developing very strong relationships with the most powerful members of our Congress? So then when we see that there's mandatory vaccines for the Gardasil vaccine, which has never been proven to prevent cancer in girls, but actually has caused enormous amount of suffering and death, and you see, how did that happen? Follow the money trail. And to follow the money trail leads you right back to political power. People give money because it gives them access. The people are not just the senators, and the House members, but rather they're their staff. If you're a very bright person that's willing to open your doors to your legislator, then you have a very, very profitable future. And that's why it's done. So when you go to vote, you have to understand you must do some homework. If you do your homework, then you can pretty well see whether or not the people you're voting for are people who are really going to try to make it a better world for everyone and are not influenced by the people who've given them the money. And that's why you shouldn't vote unless you are voting for people who are uncontaminated by money. If they are, then it's a wasted vote. They'll lie. They're pathologically dysfunctional. Look at all the crimes that people in Congress have committed. Look at the low moral character of most. Look at the self-righteous indignation that they throw towards someone only to be caught doing the same thing themselves. Look at the double standards they hold. First, how it ideally should be, one term only for every office in America. The president, Senate, House, the governor, mayors, one term of 2 years. Secondly, all campaigning should be public, no private money or corporate money allowed into campaigns at all. Campaigns should only be 3 months with all people having a chance to be given the most important issues of the day and let them write up and present so we can all read their positions of what they would do concerning these issues. From a lottery, you select people then to have debates to share their points of view. Over a period of time, everyone has a chance to share their points of view, and then you vote for the person that you feel best represents the interest that we need. That is the only fair way. That way you don't have to feel that only the rich and powerful will ever get elected. The mayor of New York became mayor simply because this is a billionaire who spent over $100 million of his own money to buy the mayorship of New York. But why shouldn't we have a firefighter? Why shouldn't we have a social worker? Why shouldn't we have a school teacher also have the capacity to run for the mayor of a city? We'd like to think that you have to have special knowledge to be a senator or a house member. It's not true. Most of these people have no experience in law, certainly not in public policy. They come from backgrounds of running businesses or corporate interest, and then assume that we should believe that they have our interests at stake. So until such time that a legitimate third party can be created, then I wouldn't vote for anyone that I saw had been tainted. Because otherwise, and I am saying, a bad person in office is better than no person in office, and that's just not true. Gene, does that answer your question?
Yes, Gary. I just watched 660 Minutes, and I see a bunch of children sleeping in motel in Florida. Their parents lose their job, can lose their house. What this official is, what they're doing spending trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars destroying look at the world, why we have, you know, all these people are suffering here. Don't they have humanity? I thought humanity was part of our value system. What are they doing, Gary?
When did humanity become a part of our value system? You have two realities here, Gene. The reality of the real world and the reality of a media-manipulated image of who we are as individuals, as corporations, and as government employees and as government officials. None of that reality is real. And none of it is a true, authentic universe or a spiritual reality. It is all a mass manipulation. We want the world to believe that we're kind at the same time that we're bombing their villages and undoing democratically elected governments. We tell people that we want people to have a decent wage, and 920 million garments were made in Bangladesh last year, where women were working 7 days a week, 16 to 20 hours a day, beaten if they did not do their work in the quickest amount of time, given bad water to drink, so massive diarrhea. If you went into Bangladesh, to the main city, you would see 1.6 million women going home at all hours, including at midnight, because they don't have the money to take a train or a bus or a cab or even a rickshaw. They have to walk. They also have children. They have husbands. But that is not important to those people making the money. You look at the major pension funds. They're exploiting the power of the pension fund to buy massive amounts of land in Africa. The African land at one time had held people and tribes for millennia who lived off the land. Now they're thrown off the land so that speculators can speculate on that land and create crops that control the price. It's all speculation and greed. But if you were to sit down with any of the heads of these pensions or hedge funds or bankers that are financing this, and you said, have you actually been to a factory in Bangladesh? Have you actually ever cared about looking at the label, the clothes you wear, and see that a woman was engaged in slave labor to do it? Do you realize then that you were wearing anything that was made by slave labor means you're supporting slavery? Do you support slavery? First, they would become indignant and say, of course I don't support slavery. You would say, but you're wearing clothes that was made at 14 cents an hour, just over $5.50 a week. And they would say, well, you know, I wouldn't want slave labor, but, you know, that's not my responsibility. No, but that's globalization. And that's what the entire economic system in America supports, globalizing. And it's gotten so bad, Gene, that people will vote for politicians that will then allow corporations to have no barriers in creating debt that buys their company, closes it down, fires them, takes their work overseas, so once again another company, whether it's in Haiti or someplace else, is using slave labor wages. No unions allowed, no workman's compensation. You get injured on the job, too bad. And so that a corporation can make more profit, so it can brag about how unique it is, and all the while completely cannibalizing the American worker. Where are the American workers and the unions opposing this? They have been complicit in their own annihilation. They are corrupt at the top levels and stupid in the rank and file. If they had any sense at all unions would be opposed to the Democrats and Republicans. They would stage massive campaigns and sit-downs and general strikes to stop home foreclosures, to stop usurious lending rates that not even Tony Soprano would have charged, the corruption of the system, the privatization, neoliberalism. No. Greed. But they don't. And so they will look for the next Bill Clinton or the next Obama, the next Al Gore, the next John Kerry, the next charismatic person who will promise everyone that it will be better tomorrow and pay no attention to what the person's actually doing or who funds their campaigns or who they surround themselves with. And it starts all over again. It's like Groundhog Day. You lied to us before, but we have amnesia. We'll forget that you lied. Lie to me again today, but do it with a smile. Shake my hand. Invite me to the White House. Make me feel important. I'm enamored by your celebrity status. As long as I'm making my money and I'm heading this union, you know, hey, I'm right in there with everyone else. The whole system is corrupt. So you have to look at all of our institutions and how all of our institutions have been betrayed because of those seeking power over others. So you see, it's not just about elected officials, it goes beyond that. More powerful than the elected officials are the people that maintain the large multinational conglomerates and the Federal Reserve and the international banking community. This is the power base that never gets challenged, is never mentioned in television. The real power behind the scenes, behind the throne, is never revealed. And when you do reveal it, you're called a nut or conspiratorialist. And as a result, they even have built into the nomenclature how to deflect any intelligent, reasonable, and responsible criticism. So is it any wonder, Gene, that we are a nation in decline? We are a nation that has engaged in over 160 subversive acts of undermining democratic movements and union movements and pro-people movements, and people wanted a better standard of living or to protect their water, protect their soil, and we always, without exception, without absolute exception, were always on the wrong side in history. Maybe I got it wrong, though, Gene. And if I did, I'm going to be the first to say that I got it wrong. Maybe America didn't give $3 billion a year to Egypt, and that was mainly for its military campaign and to protect the people in power, the oligarchy and the military complex in Mubarak. Maybe we didn't support 20 of the 22 Arab League nations and Saudi Arabia amongst them by giving them billions of dollars in weapons and intelligence systems to stop their own people from seeking democracy and freedom. Maybe we didn't want women in Saudi Arabia driving cars or working. Maybe we didn't want to see the people go to the streets, and we did everything we could to keep the people in power who've been in power, who then used all of our aid, all of our intelligence, all of our torture techniques, all of our rendering off and into their prison system to repress their own people. Maybe that didn't happen. But then again, it did. It's hard to look in a mirror and see the truth of who you are. It's much easier to turn the channel and see Paris Hilton or Lindsay Lohan or Charlie Sheen, buffoonery, smoke and mirrors, bread and circus. Because if you can look in the mirror and see the truth of what you've become as a nation, its institutions, its power brokers, its policymakers, and how corrupt they all are, then at least you can withdraw your support from them. And once you withdraw your support, there's both the exhilaration of being free, and also you see the truth in all things. There's a comfort in living in almost an opium-induced state where the media lulls you into feeling that you're okay only if you buy something, but But if you do have a bad day, you have a brain chemical imbalance, and take a drug and you'll feel better. That don't protest because we don't like people that are protesting. We actually have a new mental illness, authority defiance disorder. And then, of course, you'll be on everyone's watch list. But hold on, weren't we supposed to be able to protest in America? Yeah, but now they have the right to tap our phones, read our mail, create surveillance, and put us on constant watch. Because we're one of the people that made them feel uncomfortable about the lies they tell and the betrayal of any American ideal that at one time we actually had. And it comes from both the right has betrayed us and the left has betrayed us. They have both betrayed us. And we like to think that somehow the right is the savior, the left is the savior, depending upon your points of view and what you support. It is only when you free yourself from these ideologies and their ideologues, and then you listen carefully and look, and you'll see the truth. They're all buffoons. And they're not our friends. And there's nothing that they would give us that is sustainable. So the painful lesson is the rebirth. The painful lesson is breaking free of these systems of idolatry and looking for the truth within yourself. And then you'll connect with those who share the truth in our larger community. Ours is a silent movement. We get no media and no respect. But do not think for a moment that there are not a lot of very conscientious, caring, loving people who know the truth and are working towards positive solutions. There are millions of us. Millions and millions. But you wouldn't know that from what we see put forward. Gene, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. I'm sorry that we had the phone glitch there. I just looked down and we had about 93 people try to get through. On our next program, we'll certainly see that the phones are working. You have a chance to get through earlier in the program. A special presentation, progressive commentaries from myself and others, because we need to begin to think deeper, even if at times it makes us feel uncomfortable. Have a nice day.